This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. On the hot seat this morning is Chan Wai Leo. He is the CEO of AME REIT. Before the break, is this soon-to-be-listed REIT acquiring its industrial assets at the peak of the market? Wai Leo, I want to come back to the financials. You know, I like to ask these detailed questions, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that popped up at me is that AME REIT is listing at an extremely low gearing of just 8.1%. The SE guidelines say 50% is the max, right? And I checked around, most of the REITs have a gearing ratio of around 30% or thereabouts. So why is your gearing so low?
One is because a lot of the assets are from the sponsor injected to the REIT via a unit exchange. The sponsors don't, it's not, like you said, it's not a cashing out exercise, so they are retaining quite a substantial interest. So they want
units in the REIT.
So effectively, the whole at the company level, they hold about 51%, right? So because of that, naturally, when you do units exchange, then the gearing becomes relatively low. But it works to our advantage. So if you look at the context of things, if I was geared today at 30%, the next question you have asked me is that the last 75 basis point that the 75 basis point that was raised, what was the impact to our bottom line, then it will be quite substantial. It will probably hit about almost 2%.
Okay.
But because we are now only at 8%, that impact to the bottom line is very small. So what we then have is the opportunity to then slowly gear up to buy. I know leverage is our favorite leverage.
Yes.
We want to gear, you know, so we will not keep the gearing low. Typically, what we will do is the next round of acquisitions, we all be gearing. So we're gearing, most likely we'll gear up to about 40%. We won't hit the yield of 50%.
Yeah.
We want to stay away from that because then when you go to market, everyone thinks you're pinned to the corner, then they start discounting your units when you do for placement, right?
Yes.
So we will probably gear up to about 40 to 45%, and then quickly start planning another round of placement. But we won't issue units until we have clarity on the utilization of the proceeds.
So when you have assets that are already ripe for injection. But I want to look at it from a financial engineering perspective. I hear what you just said. You know, because you're right, why not use the power of leverage to acquire and then make the spread, which is what REITs do, between the property yield and the weighted average cost of capital, which you aren't at 8.1% because your gearing is so low.
Yeah, so like I said, the opportunity right now is that I'm at least in control of my gearing, right?
Okay.
And the next round of acquisitions, we can watch where the interest rate takes us.
I can tell you where it's going. It's going up, Wai Leo. It's not coming down.
I like to think that it will stay stagnant for a while, you know. But let's see where it goes. But like I said, even if it does, like I said, it's not the rising interest rate environment is a double-edged sword, Xiao Ning. Why I say that is that yes, it makes acquisition a little bit harder for the REIT because you know we buy on the spread,
yeah,
right? But it doesn't mean that acquisition is impossible. It just means that the manager needs to sweat the assets harder.
Yes.
Right? We need to look at assets. We could be buying assets, say, at mid-fives, right? But with upsides or maybe enhancement, we have empty land you want to, you can build additional one. Warehouses that you can increase the ceiling height to accommodate more racks, right? Or even tenants structure where the rates are under-rented. So you know that if you actually do the tenant mix, change it, put a little bit of capex, get it rented at market, you will trick your yield up again. And or do like what some of the REITs are doing, total brownfield redevelopment. Tear down the entire thing and rebuild.
Okay.
Right? But of course, that comes with another risk of, you'll talk about labor shortages and increase in material costs and stuff like that. So why I say that is it's not impossible to buy. It just makes the job a little bit harder. But the other flip side of things is, as interest rates rises, asset owners are also most of the time leveraged. They are either investors, they probably have some leverage, like you say, people like leverage, they probably leverage. Operators, their working capital is probably leveraged and charged. So as interest rates rises, they are also stressed in terms of cash flow.
So are you seeing more deals come to the market? At the moment, it's all coming from your sponsor, but let's say third party. Do you see more deals coming to you?
Well, we've been in the news lately, so a lot of deals has been coming, a lot of cold calls has been flowing in. So we are seeing that. So I'm not sure whether that's reflective of what the market is, but obviously there are still interest. But notably, the compression on yields in Klang Valley is still quite compressed. So it's still hard. The expectation is still between buyer and seller is still a little bit of a gap.
Mismatch.
There's a mismatch. So, but I, like I said, the reasons, what I said earlier, I think that mismatch will probably come to an equilibrium.
You know, REITs, because a lot of people don't realize it, actually charge management fees and performance-related fees. Yes. So one thing is, even if, let's say, I bought your IPO, there's a management fee of 1%, and I buy that for you. I buy that not for you to manage cash, but properties. So that's one reason why I like leverage. But there's also a performance fee of 5%. What is that based on? What's the hurdle rate here?
Well, that performance fee is pegged to NPI.
Okay.
So as you grow the NPI, then you get a percentage of NPI. Mm. So and if you look across the 18 REITs that we have, I think REITs that's listed probably after 2010 has the element of performance.
For example, Axis does not have, because they were the first in Malaysia.
Yeah. So then it sort of compensates. If you look at then those guys that those REITs that don't have performance fee typically has higher base fee. But the base fee is always a percentage, like in this case, 1% of total asset total asset value. But ours, although we have we indicated in our trust deed that we will charge 1%, but at IPO, we're only charging 0.3%.
Okay. What about the performance fee though? What is that based on?
That's based on NPI.
But is there like a percentage? I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, it's a percentage on the NPI that you earn. So if you grow the NPI, then you get more fees.
How much must you grow it by then?
It's not a differential. It's still pegged to just the NPI for the year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So whether or not you do well, if the NPI is flat year on year, you just nicely earn a 5%. Is that it?
Yes.
It's a good business to be in. But then I also want to come back to this interest rate cycle, because, you know, I just said not too long ago, the interest rate cycle is up. Would it have been more sense to lock in more debt earlier rather than, let's say, go to the market now and take on some fixed loans?
So if you look at how a REIT gears and a REIT then raises equity to do acquisitions, typically what you do is you want to gear up and then do an equity raising.
Yeah.
That's faster. But if you had to do equity raising to buy assets, it's not impossible, but it's just that then it becomes a bit more procedural. You actually have to do a circular to tell them, oh, we are raising money to buy these specific assets.
Yeah.
Right. So it's in terms of timing and a lot of vendors per se don't like uncertainty. They don't like saying that, oh, you still need to
happen.
You still need to get share union holders approval and stuff like that. So we want to be able to be nimble to actually buy that.
Okay.
Right. So it makes sense for the REIT to have a low gearing at the moment so that it can then do that growth spurt by just using leverage to buy. Right. So we don't want to be sitting idle at 8% like what you say. We want to be able to acquire, you know, and try and hit that limit as soon as possible. You know?
So from the sounds of it, the asset injection pipeline isn't going to come so much from your sponsor, right? Because pretty much they've injected most of the assets in already.
Right.
So what is the visibility like when it comes to potential new assets then?
All the while, the mandate was to actually try and buy third-party assets, right? The vendor will supplement. It's not the other way around.
Okay.
Where you wait for the sponsor to inject and you supplement a third-party. So we have to work harder, scour the market in that sense. So the plus point in terms of the REIT, so if you look across the entire MREIT space, there are about 6 to 7 REITs that have industrial properties, but 2 that are really industrial focused will be the 3rd. But what sort of differentiate us is that we have a vendor, or rather a sponsor, who is actually an industrial property developer, a listed one that is. And so they are focused on churning out assets. So if, for whatever reasons, the market dry up, right, we can still sort of bank on ours to actually churn out assets, because all their parks that they run right now in Johor, they're all full. And they recently just launched another park in SLC called iTech Valley. So what we're hoping for is that, although we are not saying that I'm dependent on my sponsor, but that sponsor gives us that comfort that there's always a backup plan, and something that we can look towards to put in another few assets.
Okay, so I did some digging on the profile of the subject properties. And what caught my eye is that in 2024, 26% of the leases expire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always a headache for the manager, right? So how worried are you that these 26% of tenants won't renew their leases?
Okay, so 26%, that's on the space, but in terms of total revenue, I think it's about 20%, slightly lower. Not that it makes a lot of difference, but we are not terribly worried in the sense that if you look at historical, you see, like as I mentioned, our asset size are bite sizes. They are that 30 to 130,000 square feet.
So space. Nothing, nobody that's really chunky. Yeah. No tenant that takes up more than 10% of your total and net lettable area.
Well, the top 10 tenants take up about 40% of the gross rental income. But what I'm trying to say is that they are small sizes. They're not small sizes, they're medium sizes where replacement tenants are easier to come by. And as compared to, say, a million square feet facility, you probably can chop that maybe half. So even if you chop that four times, it's 250,000 square feet of space that you need to find a tenant for.
But what are your expectations in terms of rental reversion terms? I mean, is it in line with inflation? Because currently the average monthly rental rate is 1.56 per square foot for 2022, right? Mm-hmm. But that's actually lower than 2021, which was 1.58. So are we going to expect this figure to improve in 2023? Are you going to get a bump?
I think the way the data was presented is that you saw that a little bit of a drop because there was one asset that came on board and they didn't have full tenancy. So it sort of like dragged it a bit. But if you look across our portfolio, the tenancy rates didn't drop. In actual fact, it actually increased. You know, the sponsors are also cognizant of the fact that the last few assets that they were building were at the height of the increase in material prices. But they managed to cover some of them because a lot of stuff they actually hedged. They bought some of the materials and kept it, right? So whatever they couldn't hedge, some of it was passed on to the tenants. Mm. So we can see the sponsor side, when they sell some of the units, they are slightly higher than what we see in 2021, 2020. Rental rates have also ticked up a little bit. We are looking rates touching 160, 165 right now.
Okay.
For the newer facilities.
So that will be pretty much in line with the average monthly leasing rates by your three closest competitors, Alsam, Atrium, and Axis, where the average is 164. Can you do better than that, or pretty much that is the industry standard?
For now, that's the industry standard. If everything starts going up, our rental rates cannot stay stagnant. It may have a lag effect or for it to catch up, but eventually it will still also be on the rise.
Now, while you're the AME REIT indicative yield, is 5.5%, yes? That's what I see in the papers being reported.
5.67 based on 2023 forecast.
Okay. But we are in a rising interest rate environment. Mm. And I think when you look at REITs, or at least when you invest in it, the key is to look at the spread between that and the risk-free rate. Mm. Yeah? So if I look at the 10-year MGS rate, it's hovering around 4% now, but although it hit a high of 4.5%, so tell me, why should I buy the REIT? Where's the value? Because the spread is just going to get thinner and thinner.
It potentially can get thinner. It's where you take a stand in terms of rising interest rate. Although we are in an inflationary environment, but a lot of this are actually not caused by demand. A lot of it is actually caused by supply chain disruption. Hopefully hit its peak already.
Yes.
Going forward, it shouldn't rise anymore. Hopefully it comes off, or at least stays where it is right now.
So why buy AME REIT? Why don't I buy like Axis REIT, for example? Okay, their yield is lower. You're looking at below 5%, but they are much larger than you, right? Their market cap is what? Above 3 billion. You're coming to the market at a much smaller, and as we know how REITs work, usually people just buy the biggest of that particular sector. Mm-hmm. So tell me, why should I take up...
So I'm not saying ask you to put all your money into AME REIT. I'm asking you put a little bit of money into AME and spread out your little bit of eggness across all the REITs. You know, so yes, we are cognizant that we are not the largest, but I think the plans is to actually grow it as fast as we can. Mm. But we don't want to grow for the sake of just growing it. I think we need to buy really, really right assets so that we can actually sweat the assets and not, you know, be laden with the fact that we got a lemon.
On that note, thank you for your time today. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Chan Wai Leo, CEO of AME REIT. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Frustrated that your property has not appreciated in value in the last 5 years, or you can't sell it at a decent profit? Yes, the property market in Malaysia has been in the doldrums, but one segment has been booming, and that is the industrial space. It's been a beneficiary of the shift towards e-commerce as demand for logistics and warehousing grew. We speak to Ashara Real Estate Investment Trust that is focused in this space. Joining us is Chan Wai Leo. He is the CEO of AME REIT. congratulations on your listing on Bursa Malaysia very soon, right? So first off, the REIT will comprise of 31 industrial properties and interestingly, 3 worker dormitories. But I'm curious, is AME REIT buying these assets at the peak of the cycle for industrial properties?
If you look at the asset valuation that was injected for the assets, the industrial properties were injected at a cap rate of about 5.7 to about 6.25%. Yeah, the dorms were injected slightly higher, 6 to 6.5. So if you look at market valuation, whether it's at the peak, I won't say it's at the peak. We still have a buffer. If you look at assets that's being acquired right now, especially for the REITs, they are all trending close to about 6 and potentially pushing the psychological limit to below about, you know, high 5 plus nets, you know. So market valuation for our assets are still, I would say that it's not at its peak at this point in time.
Yeah, because like you say, you know, it's injected in at about 557 million ringgit. But I also realise that there's no discount. And so why isn't there one? While even if we buy a small house, okay, we always ask for a discount. What more when it's a bulk purchase of 34 properties?
Okay. We didn't give a discount. We sort of gave a discount indirectly, okay? So the assets were all injected at market value, okay? But when we did our book build and when the prospectus was launched, retail price was priced at 115. Now, when we did the book build, our book was the Insti book was covered about 4.2 times. The retail portion about 3.5 times. And it was all at 115. So, and if we looked at the institutional investors that came into the book, they essentially are a lot from AME Elite, our sponsor side. So they were strong supporters of Elite and now, in a sense, supporters of the REIT. So the sponsors decided that perhaps it is good to leave something on the table.
Yes, of course. We all want to make some money, right?
Yeah. So instead of closing at 115, that's why you see the price now at 113. So there is some form of discount that you're referring to in that sense.
All these properties are located within Iskandar Malaysia, right? So be it iPark at SAC, iPark at Indapura, iPark at SILC. Are you not concerned that there's the danger of geographical concentration risk? And the reason I'm asking this is because I've looked around the area and there are other industrial properties in Johor. So you've got Eco Business Park 2, Tropicana Industrial Park, and also this TPM Techno Park. Apparently in Johor, there's an overhang of 352 industrial properties in the state. So is there too much concentration risk?
Now, in terms of, to talk about the glut, the asset type in terms of where, especially industrial properties where the glut sits, it's your smaller units, investable units by individuals. So you're looking at the 5,000, 8,000 square feet facilities. So if you look at some of the names that you also indicated, like Eco Business Park and Tropicana Business Park, right, they typically don't do the kind of facilities that we do at our sponsor site. Our sponsor site builds facility at least from either 1 acre, 2.5, 3 acre size. And a lot of the facilities are built to suit. So we don't say built to suit in the sense that it's very specific, like say fat facility, but built to suit in the sense that maybe they want more docking bay, slightly smaller office space or bigger warehouse space, right? So all these assets are not mass produced. They are not cookie cutter units where developers just build, say, 300 units and then just flood the market like that. So that's where that glut happens. So our space, where our asset sits right now is that it's not your big assets, that 500,000, 600,000, 700,000, 1 million square feet facilities. They are in that 30,000 to 130,000 region. We are not occupying the space where the glut is. Now, in terms of geographical location, if you look across peninsula at least, there are only 3 major industrial states. So you have the northern states, you have the central, and then you have Johor. And if you take Penang out of the equation, because a lot of their facilities, they are all billion-dollar facilities, because they're all fat facilities, cost a lot of money. So you talk about the generic industrials then when it comes to warehousing and manufacturing. So there are actually 2 big states, which is Klang Valley and Johor. Being in Johor, yes, we do agree that there is some level of concentration, but if you look at the portfolio itself, it's quite diverse. To us, concentration in Johor is not necessarily a bad thing. Of course, like I said, throughout the prospectus, you can see that it's already mentioned that the manager has been mandated to buy assets, third-party assets.
Yeah, in central and north, right?
Correct. The sponsor side is also cognizant of the fact that they have been specialists in Johor because they are all Johorians, right? But recently, I'm not sure whether you heard of the news, they've entered into a joint venture in Majestic Group for a tract of land in Penang. So they are also looking to expand out of Johor and start creating the iPark branding throughout Malaysia. So the next asset cluster, I'm hoping that you will be in Klang Valley.
Okay. You know? So let's talk about your sponsor, AME Elite, and they are a listed company. Mm-hmm. What assurances can you give us that the deals were done on an arm's length basis, that there was no conflict of interest in terms of the valuation of $557 million paid?
Okay. So typically, all the valuations are all done by third-party valuers, right? So it's been vetted through and it's also, during the process, it's also went into SE's valuation department for vetting.
Yeah, so it's not a cashing out exercise for your sponsor.
It is not a cashing out exercise, but maybe I would like to rephrase that a little bit. One of the reasons why they actually did the listing right now, it's always been part of their IPO plan, even back when they listed Elite back in 2019. Because as a property developer, when you have inventory or investment property sitting in your books, it's a big drag on your working capital, right? So that's why you see property developers don't hold stocks. They typically just launch, sell, you know. But for the business model that the Elite, they don't have a choice whether when a client walks in, whether they want to buy or whether they want to lease. Because it could be a queen bee coming in and say that, look, I don't want to buy any of your assets, I want to lease. Are you going to do the deal? So if they think it's advantageous for the entire park, they may do the deal. But what happens is then they're stuck with the investment property. So they have close to that 500, that 600 million worth of assets sitting in their books. And like I said, they're not exactly your big-time property developer. So this was an exercise for them to not, I won't say cash out, but basically securitize all their investment properties. So that, but they will still retain a big chunk because on listing, the sponsor is holding 51%, and the four individual substantial shareholders hold about 15% of the stock. They still have interest in the listed entity.
So what assurances are you going to give us that the interest of the sponsor and the REIT is aligned? So yeah, I know there's first right of refusal when it comes to AME Elite's properties. But I'm just curious, can the REIT refuse? Can you guarantee that every asset acquisition from AME Elite will be yield enhancing?
That's the mandate. I don't get to say whether I get first bite of the cherry. I mean, I've got my chairman telling me, look, Leo, if you don't sharpen your knife sharp enough, I might sell to another third-party REIT. You know, so yes, it's not a guarantee that we always have to pick assets from them. Mm. You know, I think the REIT has its own independent board. If you look at the board composition, 50% is independent and 50% is non-independent. It's 50-50.
And they don't get to vote when it's a related party transaction, the directors?
Yes, the directors, the interested, the non-independent directors don't get to vote. So a lot of it then goes to the independent directors and ultimately the unit holders.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is the SE guidelines allow for property development and real estate under construction of up to 15% of the total asset value. Right. This applies to all REITs. But is this something that AME REIT will be pursuing or is this the role of the sponsor?
Okay, hence that question, earlier question you had about conflict. So we are cognizant for the fact that the REIT can also do development.
Yes.
So what we internally sort of agreed is that if a client comes about and wants to be, say, situated in the sponsor's development, right? Then naturally that deal becomes the sponsor's deal because the land is already with the sponsor. Yeah. Now, if the client comes on, say, looking at a third-party land, right? So then the question becomes, should the REIT pursue or the sponsor will pursue? Now, for the moment, the REIT is still small. So that 15% of my AUM is probably about 70, 80 million.
Which isn't very much in the world of property development or, correct, you know, correct, any real estate development.
Yeah. Yeah. So for at least for the short term, short to medium term, a lot of that development likely would be done at the holding co level. So if it's done that way and it's injected to the REIT, it's still an RPT, so it's still subjected to voting by the independent directors and the unit holders.
On the breakfast grill this morning is Chan Wai Leo. He's the CEO of AME REIT. When we come back from the break, should we buy this IPO? BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.